Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. Always live on the free Odyssey app.
The Score!
For some chin music.
Hey, how about a warning?
Sure. Watch out you don't get killed.
Because sometimes in baseball, you've got to send a strong message, especially when someone has it coming. Each Saturday, David and Bruce come in high and tight with a response to something that deserves one, like this.
Yeah, I heard that he said that in, Prizes said that his opinion welcome, it also carries weight. The guy's experienced. So I'll ask him about it. Usually that's better said in the clubhouse to your teammates. I think it's a curious statement. It's better to be discussed with your family. If there's a problem, we straighten it out.
That was Tony La Russa responding to Johnny Cueto's comments about the White Sox needing more fire. David Hall, Bruce Levine, inside the clubhouse here, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. This is one of our favorite segments, chin music. And I think, to me, Bruce, Tony put himself right in the line of fire there. Johnny Cueto said this: we can't get comfortable. We need to go out and play hard and show what we can do. We need to fight. We need to show the fire that we have, if we have any. And that was through Billy Russo, the interpreter. And Johnny Cueto is a veteran who has been very well accomplished and has a World Series ring and knows about winning and what a winning clubhouse feels like. I think Tony La Russa should have, he omitted two words from what he said about Johnny Cueto's comments. And they were, thank you. Thank you, Johnny Cueto, for saying what everybody watching this lethargic team is thinking. They do need something. They are too comfortable. And thank goodness somebody finally noticed and spoke up.
Let's hear from Lucas Giolito, who I talked to yesterday, about the Johnny Cueto comment and what his thoughts were. All right, we're having some technical issues with the Giolito beat, but in essence, he's gotten some support from his teammates, and let's go back and listen to Lucas Giolito on Johnny Cueto's comments.
You know, I saw what Johnny said, and yeah, I hear where he's coming from, because I feel like sometimes it's important for us to play with passion and high level of energy, because when we do that, then we put ourselves in a much better position to win that given game.
You have to have fun and bring energy when playing so many close games or, you know, behind in so many.
It's definitely harder to create a fun and energetic environment. You know, if you like go down early in a game or something like that, because now you're climbing back. But good teams are able to come together and everyone kind of pulling from the same rope, trying to bring the best out of themselves, bring the best out of each other. I mean, that's all you can really do.
Tony's suggestion after the game was, we should keep these things in-house and work things together. You know, that's how teams do it. You concur? Or he also said, you know, Johnny has every right in the world to say whatever he wants.
Yeah. I commend Johnny for speaking honestly about how he felt. At the same time, I see the other side of, like, you know, you don't want to you know, you don't want to talk about everything. So, you know, I think there's a fine line somewhere. But at the same time, like, I mean, it's good to be honest.
Thanks, Lou.
Good to be honest, Bruce. What was your takeaway from talking to Lucas Giolito in light of those Cueto comments?
Well, you know, having interviewed athletes for over 40 years, the hesitation and the choosing of words stood out to me. Because Lucas is a very, very well-thought-out guy, very bright guy. But he was being very careful and at the same time being very honest. I think what he was saying was, I applaud Johnny Cueto for saying what he said. It's probably something we all think in here from time to time. This is me interpreting it. But David, that's what I got out of it. And that, we should be careful and respectful of each other. But damn it, it's 110 games in and we're not showing that fire that we need to win every ball game. It just doesn't appear to be there all the time.
And all Cueto was essentially doing was asking a rhetorical question, and I think maybe the implication was a challenge, but it wasn't really a direct one. It wasn't like, we need to have everybody look with – and he could have been stronger, Bruce. I thought it was a real mild challenge to teammates, well, if you will, a public declaration.
It was very reminiscent of Nick Castellanos coming in with the Cubs 4 years ago, and he brought tremendous energy and a great bat to the team, but he stated flat out at that time, where is the energy on this team? I don't see the buzz, you know. And Cueto is pretty much an outsider as well, having not been with the team in spring training, and he is also saying, which I agree with, I don't see the fire every night in this team, and we need to show a little bit more. I don't see anything wrong with it. I think what La Russa said was, you have to be cautious about that, but at the same time said, you know, he has every right to say it. So that was kind of a mixed message there. But from my perspective, this has nothing to do with La Russa. This is on the players.
Well, okay.
Have to
we
be kind there.
Of disagree there. Let me respond to what you just said.
You know,
about
this isn't high school baseball. These are professional players.
All right. First of all, the difference between Castellanos saying what he said with the Cubs when he came, and Cueto saying what he did this week is that Castellanos was similarly an outsider making an observation. He wasn't here as long, but also the Cubs, that core, had actually won something. So him coming in and making that diagnosis was like, all right, who are you? I get it. And it was not necessarily wrong, but I could understand why guys with the World Series rings in the Cub clubhouse would be looking at this guy thinking, well, you know what? We might know a little bit better because we've actually been in a parade here.
Guess what? They were wrong.
Hold on. I'm saying they were wrong. But in that context, in that moment, they were – right to push back because they felt like they had proven something. This White Sox team hasn't proven a darn thing. They haven't proven anything.
The Cubs
Bruce,
hadn't
they haven't
proved
won anything.
Anything that year. David, the Cubs hadn't proved anything for a few years after that, and that's why Castellanos had to be brought in because they needed more firepower. They needed someone with a little bit of a moxie to go along
okay,
with it.
Okay, but my and, point, Bruce, let's not get down in the weeds here, okay? I'm saying that they had more reason to be somewhat offended, if you will, than this White Sox group who has Johnny Cueto with a World Series ring in his background. He's a proven winner. He's a veteran who's savvy, and he is making this sort of comment that should not have been questioned by the manager, should have been supported and encouraged and amplified. Because you know what? I disagree here. The White Sox do have players who are responsible for their own self-motivation, but it takes a leader to get the most out of these guys. Ozzie Guillen said it on the postgame on NBC Sports Chicago, and I would echo it here this morning. The White Sox players need somebody to show them how and to get the most out of them. That's not the manager. That's not what's happening now.
I couldn't disagree with you more on that. Because, again, we're 110 games into the season, okay? They're not replacing the manager. And these are professional players that have already won 93 games and a division last year. We weren't talking about any fire under La Russa last year, okay? We're talking about whether he would fit in with the team or not. Obviously, he did. They won a division. They got injured. They were poor in the second half. Their offense sputtered. It's continued to sputter from the middle of last summer all the way through now. They don't hit home runs. They don't manufacture runs. They have to pitch games where the other team only scores one or two runs for them to be able to win ball games. I mean, it's incumbent upon the players to get it done. We can't cry about the manager or coaching right now. All we can say is Cueto is calling out his teammates to show a little bit more passion, and I think that's great.
Passion means focus. Focus means concentration. Concentration leads to not making mental mistakes on the bases, in the field, catching grounders, throwing to the right base, hitting the cutoff man, for goodness sakes. These are things that are fundamental baseball things.
Is that La Russa or the player's fault?
It starts at the top. Bruce, you're describing a world free of accountability, and I don't live in that world and don't want to. Because
You're 100% wrong, David, because the accountability is on the players. These are accomplished players that have gone to the playoffs 2 years in a row. For the most part, it's the same team, okay? Where is that this year? Have they forgotten how to play baseball, winning baseball? The manager managed them to the division last year. So where is the accountability for the players this year?
Well, I think this is a collective. There's enough responsibility and blame to go around, and if they don't get to the playoffs and they don't win a playoff series, there'll be enough accountability and people paying for it in ways that may be, you know, with their jobs. But right now, I think we're talking about job descriptions, and players must produce. You have to hit, you have to pitch, you have to field, whatever your job is. And as a manager, you have to lead. And leadership means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. I am questioning, not you, this is me, questioning the leadership quality that Tony La Russa has provided, because I do think that it has created a very sleepy environment and has been very tolerant of lazy players who don't hustle down the – and I think everything is related. When you have everybody encouraged to go 75-80%, you're going to get a team that looks lethargic, and when they don't hit, it's amplified.
That's not Tony's message. That's a message from the front office and the medicals, okay? If you're a manager, you're trying to interpret – what the front office and the medical people say to you, and then take that message down to the players and tell them, be smart about what you do. And in the interpretation, what has been lost is players don't really seem to know when to turn it on, when to turn it off. I get that, because these are world-class baseball players that have only known one thing in their lives, and that is to give complete hustle and go full out. So from my perspective, they're lost in translation.
And you can mock me for this, Bruce, but here's what I think. When I watched the Cubs on Thursday in Iowa, and I heard David Ross talk about being so excited, having so much enthusiasm, he wanted to run to the team photo. Okay, I want my manager being that guy for the right team. I want my manager to be so enthusiastic and aggressive every day that he gets into the clubhouse that it's infectious, that it spreads throughout every player. And you know what? Why are the Cubs playing harder than the White Sox when they have nothing to play for?
So it should be A.J. Hinch then.
If you want to go back and that's revisionist history. It should have been A.J. Hinch. Absolutely. Okay. 100%. 10 out of 10 times.
Where is his team right now?
Well, you know what? They stink too. Okay, but they don't have the roster the White Sox have. You're comparing apples and oranges.
You know what?
The White Sox have a playoff roster.
The owner would disagree with you because he just fired the general manager this week. Okay, so there's some disagreement on that. Look, I think this is a real viable conversation. I tremendously respect your opinion on this, but you know, this transcends Tony La Russa. it transcends Tony La Russa. This is about players getting the most out of their ability that are not in high school, that are not in college, that are not in the minor leagues, that have already accomplished some things here in Major League Baseball. And for some reason, outside of injury, they're not accomplishing very much this year.
And I want to be fair too, Bruce, because I do think that Tony La Russa is a Hall of Fame manager, and these are things that comes and affords him the respect. But I think that what we, big picture, expected out of a Tony La Russa team was an attention to detail, a focused intensity, and that kind of consistent approach. And I think more than anything, we can blame the players individually, and certainly they have fallen short. But collectively, you haven't seen what I just described that I wanted to see, what we expected out of a Tony La Russa baseball team. This is sloppy. They are not that kind of team. They can be lazy, and they can be confounding, and that is why they are where they are in the standings.
A short version of this would be they paid some players a lot of money too early. They paid some players a lot of money incorrectly, and they're not getting much out of it. I think if the White Sox do not make the playoffs, regardless, there's going to be changes all over the place. I guarantee you that, because I've heard it, and I've heard it talked on the South Side. There will be a lot of changes in the offseason, regardless of the outcome for this team this year.
Let's go finish with that thought, because I know we want to get to the break, but I just want to reiterate that. I said earlier this week on the Mullin Haas Show that if this doesn't go well for the White Sox, that it would not surprise me at all if the way this roster was put together, the way that the games were managed and executed, and basically some of the players who fell short of expectations. If you had a long list of people who would be held accountable, I think it may start with the general manager and not end there. Bruce, do you agree that everybody might have reason to be worried about their job security if things don't go well for the White Sox this year?
100%. And I'll give you my short-term, long-term view of the White Sox. Tim Anderson was not the same energizer for this team this year, for whatever reason. And, I don't go home with him after the games, and I don't care to know what his life is all about outside of there. For whatever reason, that has not been there. I'm not laying this on Tim Anderson. The guy hits 300, falling out of bed. I'm a huge Tim Anderson fan. But I'm telling you that if Tim Anderson is one of the leaders on this team, you know, his energy level just hasn't been what it had been in the past. And I think for us not to identify that, we talk about leaders in sports all the time. If a leader in sports is having an off year when it comes to leadership, which is okay because he's a human being, that's fine. But it can impact the team. And I think this team is, you know, when you look at the manager, he certainly has to be responsible for this team not performing well. He will be held accountable. He should be held accountable. But you have to hold accountable the players that you call leaders. You have to call them. You have to call them to the front and say, where is your leadership? Where is your energy? And it's not just Tim Anderson. There's a lot of other players on this team that just haven't lived up to the expectations.
Well put, Bruce. I respect where you're coming from. I think our disagreements are good conversation, because there's a lot to say about this White Sox season, where it's headed and where it has already been. And we are going to talk Cubs with Ron Coomer, because he was in Dyersville, Iowa, and he can tell you about how a foul ball ended up in the booth and broke a light bulb, and him and Pat Hughes and Zach ducked for cover. And that was a funny moment here on The Score. Also, Bruce, I need to tell you, obviously, the Bears start their season today, the preseason opener against the Chiefs at Soldier Field along the lakefront. And you know what? This week we started a new podcast here at Odyssey and The Score. Myself and Dan Wiederer, every week during the preseason and twice a week during the season, it's called Take the North. It will be dropped on wherever you get your podcast, but the Odyssey app, you can have access to that. Take the North is a play on the Ryan Poles declaration. When he took the job, he vowed to take the North, and we will hold him to that. Every week, Dan and I will break it down, and that was a lot of fun. Our first episode already out there. It dropped on Friday. Looking forward to doing that all season long here on The Score with Dan Wiederer. But when we come back, a man among men, Ron Coomer, The Score's very own here on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
The missile coming into the booth, it was a little high for us to catch, about 10 feet over our head, but
you start looking and you go, he's on a winning team, does a lot. We almost got a ball. It was right above us, but it took out a light.
It smashed the light above the two of you and then ricocheted out of the booth. Yeah. And I didn't want to dive on top of the desk where you guys are broadcasting.
Aristides Aquino hits a high fly ball to shallow center. Coming in as Morrell. He's got it.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. That was from Thursday night as Ron Coomer, Pat Hughes, and Zach Zaidman were broadcasting. The ball goes into the booth, breaks a light bulb, and all hell broke loose. And Ron Coomer was there to kind of keep everybody calm and keep everybody safe. And now he joins us on the guest hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Good morning, Coom. Day off, you okay? Any shrapnel wounds anywhere?
No, we're just fine. I told you the yesterday morning. It's just a baseball day. No big deal, you know. But some guys, you know, had a hard time getting out from under their table in front of them. And, you know, my partner just kept calling the game, which was the right thing to do. But we had some other guys that got a little nervous. It was kind of funny, actually.
We might know who those other guys are.
One guy that laughs, you know. Yeah, exactly. You know, Bruce. Didn't want to dive on top of the table. That's because he was under the table.
Hey, Coom, when you look at the game itself and the experience, what was that like for you?
It was very good. Way, way better than I anticipated, to be quite honest with you. When you play in some of those games or you do the exhibitions or things like that, it's just as a regular season game. It's not always the case that things are set up the way they should be or everything works pretty well or the facilities are great or, you know, there's always some things that are, you know, you just get overlooked and you just one day and you just move on. I think Major League Baseball and the people in Iowa did a very good job of the facilities were phenomenal. They took care of the players to make sure they were comfortable and able to play a regular game. The place itself is just a wow on game day. That was very, very enjoyable with a lot of fans and fan interaction. The playing surface, Bruce, to me is a very key thing because this is a big league game and it should be treated as such. And the playing surface was outstanding. It was very, very well done. So I really don't have – there's not one negative thing I could say. It was a very positive, very long day for all of us, for both teams, but it was a very good day. And I think Major League Baseball should be proud of themselves by the way they did that. And fan interaction, I just thought it was well done and great, great for the fans and from what I've heard. Great viewing, and we enjoyed broadcasting it.
It is great to hear that, Coom. And I think let's take a step back and zoom out a little bit. Moving forward, obviously, they're not going back there next year. We heard those news reports on Thursday night and Friday morning. And I do wonder, it is draining. The Cubs had a day off scheduled on Friday and the Reds to recover maybe to give them some time. You said how long of a day it was. Moving forward, how does Major League Baseball weigh the value and the benefits of what you just described? And maybe whether it's Dyersville, Iowa, or Williamsport, Pennsylvania, or any sort of smallish venue which represents an exhibition-like experience during the midst of a 162-game season, how would you weigh the pros and cons? And would you like to see more events, perhaps, like what you experienced on Thursday, added to the Major League schedule?
I would say I would not like more events, to be quite honest. I think for a team, it's very difficult. If you were a contending team and you're playing to go to the playoffs and you're in August, this is a tough time of year for everybody. Everyone's tired. Everybody's banged up a little bit. So it's difficult. And the last thing you want to do is make it worse for the players by throwing something else in. So having won a year, okay, fine, for two teams or just a couple things a year, that's one thing. But I would be careful of getting too over the top with a lot of these, you know, games that aren't being played on a normal schedule. Yesterday, for instance, we didn't get here to the hotel till 3:15, you know, the night of. So, you know, so you go into the off day, you don't go to bed till 4 in the morning. That's, you know, that's not conducive to the big league schedule. You're just, you know, you're almost up 24 hours. So I'm not a fan of all that, but it was a great experience. Some of that was good. I did not have a very good experience when we went to Williamsport. That was what I was judging it on. And it has nothing to do with the Little League World Series, but I just thought Major League Baseball a few years ago really dropped the ball and did not do what they needed to do to prepare that area for a Major League game. And that just was not very good. Once the game actually started and the kids got back to the ballpark and the kids were around the Major League game, it was fine. But if you're going to do those things, you've got to make sure that you have facilities prepared for everybody to do a Major League game and play a Major League game. And I didn't think they did a very good job at that when we went to Williamsport.
Jesse Rogers of ESPN.com reached out to Tom Ricketts and got a response this week saying that the Cubs will spend money, they will be in free agency. But he reiterated what I've been saying his mantra has been for the last 3 years now, and that is the team must be built through the minor league system. It must be there. But that said, I'm wondering what you think it will take, being a former major leaguer and an all-star, to entice players to come to Chicago. Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic had a story last week that the Cubs will be very active against trying to get one of the top shortstops out there. He mentioned Correa's name again, who has an opt-out in his contract. What will entice Correa this time around to come to the Cubs, who are rebuilding, when philosophically he stated flat out, I wasn't going to a rebuilding team at this point in my career?
Well, I think that statement of not going to a team that's rebuilding is going to ring true for all the major free agents that are out there this year. So you're going to have to show that you're willing to get in the market for a couple guys, right? That's the key. And then plus, you know, the guys that you currently have, you know, if the Cubs, like right now, they're on a little bit of a winning streak and you've got some things going your way right now, and they're playing pretty good baseball. You've got some guys that you know you're going to keep. That was the biggest thing in 14 going into the 15 season when the Cubs were looking to free agency. One, they signed a high-profile manager in Joe Maddon, and they got a high-profile pitcher in John Lester. And having a nucleus of some guys that could play and were going to be all-star players, that really helped, right? And then you add the manager. Well, the Cubs have a manager that most guys are going to know, played in the World Series, or a couple of them, and won. And so that part is kind of covered with David. The other thing is you're going to have to show some of these guys in the recruiting process that you are going after not just them, but maybe another high-profile free agent. And you have Horner. You've got some things that are already in place to where you're going to be a competitive team. So that, to me, is the biggest thing. If you're a high-level free agent, you've got to show them that you're competitive when they step on the field.
Kuma, respect your opinion, and I don't want to lead you down a path you don't want to go, but I find it interesting. the Cubs are playing winning baseball. And unlike last year at this time where things started to go south, they didn't have talent, and certainly they looked like they had lost all the life after the trading of all those big names and great players. This year, since the All-Star break, they are winning. And I wonder, what is the connection between teams that play as hard as the Cubs clearly are playing? You know, we talk about hustle in this town and what the White Sox don't have. It seems like the Cubs certainly do. And the manager's role in instilling this atmosphere where everyone's held accountable to play at a certain level of intensity. And I think you see it with the Cubs. You don't see it necessarily with the White Sox. And I just wonder, what role has that played in the Cubs' kind of surge here lately?
Well, I don't get to see the White Sox, David, nearly as much as I'd like to, obviously, just because of our own schedule. So I can't speak on them. But I can speak on what the Cubs do. And I believe if our guys didn't hustle and run balls out, and that's happened a couple times this year, right? That has happened. And it hasn't gotten a lot of news and a lot of talk, because I think it gets cleared up right away, right? I think the manager, that's not acceptable. And, you know, so I don't make a big thing of it because it doesn't happen too often. And I believe, you know, David is a really nice guy, but he definitely has that real fiery side to him. When you watched him play, you saw that daily. So there's that side of him that's there, and there's a certain way you play. And I also think with the Cubs, and I'm not speaking against any other team, in particular the White Sox, but I can just speak for the Cubs because I'm there every day. You have players that is their way of playing. You watch Nico, you watch Ian Happ, you watch Contreras, you watch some of these guys. Now, Wilson at times, because I believe he's banged up at times, they tell him to take it easy running and not get too over, you know, get too crazy about trying to take extra bases and overdo it. But, you know, these guys, you look at Ian and Nico and Wizard and some of these guys, they hustle. If they don't, it's been talked about and it's been addressed. And I don't think it's been addressed to where everybody hears about it, but I think it's been addressed, and to me, that's the positive that David brings to the table. I really do.
David and I are going to have a segment after you're off, Coom, about Fernando Tatis. I want to get your thoughts because if you're marketing a guy like this as one of your great young players, and number one, you ignore the fact that he breaks his wrist in a motorcycle accident in the off season, where the team could have broken the contract right then and there and said, "See you later. We don't owe you $300 million anymore." They ignored that. Now, taking a banned drug and being suspended for 80 games. What are your thoughts? And what type of message is that? If baseball is marketing their great young players, Is this a you know, a black eye on the sport and a black eye on where they're going with promoting a player like this?
Well, I sure would say yes. Absolutely. It's a sad thing. I mean, you know, he's been rewarded for his play by, you know, getting one of the largest contracts in our game's history, right? And you know, he's a very young guy. We know that, and he's, you know, it's just sad, I think, and it really is bad for our game. I'm telling you, you know, the steroid issue, think of the lingering effects that it had and still has on our game of that time period, that guys are still not in the Hall of Fame, that their performance on the field absolutely warranted them to be in the Hall of Fame, but they're not. And now you still have this issue. And I believe, like, with the commissioner's office, okay, then do something about it so we can fix it. Don't just keep putting a Band-Aid over this issue, right? I mean, dang, and you wonder how much of this is going on, right? If a guy gets injured and you're taking a substance that we all know helps you get back on the field quicker, you got to do something about it. and you got to make the punishment harsh. And that way it just eliminates the problem. If you keep 80 games and he's going to come back as a better player. And the reason why I say that is because he's been on the juice and he's going to be bigger, stronger, faster. So he's got an 80 game suspension and now he's going to be a better player. You know, if you take away a full year of salary and take him out for a year, boy, that's a tough one. Now that's a little different. But right now, it's a sad thing. And, you know, you look at, if you're the San Diego fans right now and you're San Diego Padres, you invest in this young guy. He breaks his wrist on a motorcycle doing wheelies is what I've heard. And then you take a banned substance and now you're not going to play the entire season when the organization's gone out and tried to do everything in their power to be a playoff contender and you're their star player and you're not going to play all year. That's a tough one, man. That's really tough.
Well put, Coom. 60 seconds. We know you are in Cincinnati tonight. Pregame here on The Score, 5 o'clock. Adrian Sampson versus Graham Ashcraft for the Reds. You're in the great American small park. So if the Cubs continued their momentum tonight, what will they be doing? What's the context for this evening?
I think first and foremost, it's on Sampson, right? Sampson's going to start tonight.
Yep.
Dominant with his fastball. If he can continue doing what he's been doing, I'm a fan, a big fan of him. He's going to pitch in our league for a while. I really believe that. He's got a good fastball. He's not afraid to use it. And if he commands his fastball tonight, it's going to be a good game for the Cubs once again. Cubs have to pitch it, right? They've been pitching incredibly well. You know, they're not a high-powered offense, and, you know, They've done such a great job on the mound. You just got to keep that going. This is one of the best hitters' ballparks in all of baseball.
You're the best, Coom. Thanks for getting up for us. And I hope you enjoyed your day off, and we will look forward to hearing you tonight on The Score.
Absolutely, guys. Always great to talk to you and Bruce on a Saturday.
Ron Coomer, Cubs analyst in the booth, and he will be in the booth tonight with Pat and Zach. Again, pregame and the score here at 5 o'clock, Cubs and Reds after that. All right, final segment, Bruce. We talked about it. You teased it. Fernando Tatis Jr., 80 games. What does it mean to the Padres? What does it mean to Major League Baseball? Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haugh on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Very disappointed. It's the second time we've been disappointed with him, and it's just, you know, you hope he grows up and, you know, learns from this and learns that it's not just, you know, it's about more than just him right now. No, look at this clubhouse. We really don't need anybody else. It'd be nice to have somebody else, but we don't need anybody else. We got everyone we need right here.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Bruce Levine, David Haugh, final segment. Michael Clevinger last night, that was about the Padres' reaction to the Fernando Tatis Jr. news, 80-game suspension, Bruce. That was a blockbuster of a news story dumped on a Friday, but apparently in the works for a while. 23-year-old superstar shortstop now unable to finish this season or play at all after missing the bulk of it with an accident, as Ron Coomer alluded to, a motorcycle accident. Careless immaturity had led to these bad decisions, and now the Padres, who went out at the trade deadline and sacrificed much of their future for the present in getting Josh Hader and Juan Soto, paying the price for Fernando Tatis Jr.'s immaturity, basically. Bad for the game.
Guess how many games Fernando Tatis has played in the major leagues. He came up in 2019. So that I'll give you.
Two seasons were? Not even two seasons, I don't think.
273 baseball games.
Wow.
273. And after, listen to this, after 153, that organization gave him a $300 million contract last year, okay? 153 from 19 and 20, okay? 20 wasn't his fault because it was a shortened season, okay? But this is a problem beyond Fernando Tatis. This is a problem with an organization giving somebody $300 million who has all the talent in the world, one of the greatest young players to come into the game physically in the last, 30 years or so. And they give him $300 million when they still have 6 years or five years of contract control left. Something's wrong in the whole thing, okay? You're giving a young guy who really doesn't, couldn't even go to a bar and order a beer until last year, this kind of money in advance. And what you're getting is you're getting paid back for not looking at the makeup of the individual and what you were doing when you gave somebody 21 years of age $300 million.
Cautionary tale, Bruce. I think this is for the same franchise that just gave up so much for Juan Soto at 23, who seems to be more mature and accomplished and polished than maybe a Tatis Jr. It also makes you think, I guess we can joke around, but boy, did the White Sox see something about Tatis Jr.'s immaturity when they dealt him in the James Shields trade?
He was 17 at the time, right?
I know. But hey, when you know, right? Maybe Rick Hahn was on to something. Do we need to give him a little credit?
Yeah.
Maybe not. Okay.
It's an ugly story for baseball, really.
It is bad for the game. I was just trying to localize it, have a little fun. Bruce, this was a lot of fun. After us, stay tuned. Steve Rosenblum is on until 2 o'clock. His guests include Chris Emma and Mark Gonzalez. The Bears kick off today at noon on the lakefront. Bruce, this has been a lot of fun. We have some people to thank.
We absolutely do. Sean, our producer, thank you so much for a job well done. David Axelrod, our good friend, and will be returning to Inside the Clubhouse soon. Great job there. Also, Ron Coomer joining us. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine, on our website, 670thescore.com, where I write Cubs and Sox all week long. David, look forward to maybe talking to you, but a big event for you next Saturday. Looking forward to you and Molly being in Las Vegas.
We'll be in Vegas. We're leaving on Thursday night. We'll be there Friday and Saturday from Circa. Bruce, this has been a lot of fun arguing, debating, talking baseball. I will be back Monday morning, 5:30, Mullane Haw. Stay tuned right here on The Score. Steve Rosenblum is next. Thanks for listening Inside the Clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Haw on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Very disappointed. It's the second time we've been disappointed with him, and it was just, you hope he grows up and, learns from this and learns that it's not just, it's about more than just him right now. Nah, look at this clubhouse. We really don't need anybody else. It'd be nice to have somebody else, but we don't need anybody else. We got everyone we need right here.
Welcome back Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, David Haw, final segment. Michael Clevinger last night. That was about the Padres' reaction to the Fernando Tatis Jr. news. 80-game suspension, Bruce. That was a blockbuster of a news story dumped on a Friday, but apparently in the works for a while. 23-year-old superstar shortstop now unable to finish this season or play at all after missing the bulk of it with an accident, as Ron Coomer alluded to, a motorcycle accident. Careless immaturity had led to these bad decisions, and now the Padres, who went out at the trade deadline and sacrificed much of their future for the present in getting Josh Hader and Juan Soto, paying the price for Fernando Tatis Jr.'s immaturity, basically. Bad for the game.
Guess how many games Fernando Tatis has played in the major leagues. He came up in 2019. So that I'll give you.
Two seasons were? Not even full two seasons, I don't think.
273 baseball games.
273.
And after, listen to this, after 153, that organization gave him a $300 million contract last year, okay? 153 from 19 and 20, okay? 20 wasn't his fault because it was a shortened season, okay? But this is a problem beyond Fernando Tatis. This is a problem with an organization giving somebody $300 million who has all the talent in the world, one of the greatest young players to come into the game physically in the last, 30 years or so. And they give him $300 million when they still have 6 years or five years of contract control left. Something's wrong in the whole thing, okay? You're giving a young guy who really doesn't, couldn't even go to a bar and order a beer until last year, this kind of money in advance. And what you're getting is you're getting paid back for not looking at the makeup of the individual and what you were doing when you gave somebody 21 years of age $300 million.
Cautionary tale, Bruce. I think this is for the same franchise that just gave up so much for Juan Soto at 23, who seems to be more mature and accomplished and polished than maybe a Tatis Jr. It also makes you think, I guess we can joke around, but boy, did the White Sox see something about Tatis Jr.'s immaturity when they dealt him in the James Shields trade?
He was 17 at the time, right?
I know. But hey, you know, right? Maybe Rick Hahn was onto something. Do we need to give him a little credit?
Yeah.
Maybe not. Okay.
It's an ugly story for baseball, really.
It is bad for the game. I was just trying to localize it, have a little fun. Bruce, this was a lot of fun. After us, stay tuned. Steve Rosenblum is on until 2 o'clock. His guests include Chris Emma and Mark Gonzalez. The Bears kick off today at noon on the lakefront. Bruce, this has been a lot of fun. We have some people to thank.
We absolutely do. Sean, our producer, thank you so much for a job well done. David Axelrod, our good friend, and will be returning to Inside the Clubhouse soon. Great job there. Also, Ron Coomer joining us. People can follow me on Twitter at MLB Bruce Levine. On our website, 670thescore.com, where I write Cubs and Sox all week long. David, look forward to maybe talking to you, but a big event for you next Saturday. Looking forward to you and Molly being in Las Vegas.
We'll be in Vegas. We're leaving on Thursday night. We'll be there Friday and Saturday from Circa. Bruce, this has been a lot of fun arguing, debating, talking baseball. I will be back Monday morning, 5:30, Mullane Haw. Stay tuned right here on The Score. Steve Rosenblum is next. Thanks for listening. Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.